Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we welcome back Ray Light. Ray is a general secretary of the Revolutionary Organization of Labor, USA. He's an author and the editor of the organization's newsletter, ROL USA. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Ray Light. We'll be talking about a variety of things, but especially the 2016 bourgeois elections. Ray Light, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
It's great to be here, Cindy.
Oh, it's really great to be here with you and to have you back on the soapbox. The last time we were together and we recorded a show, I was telling you, I don't usually do shows in person. We usually do them over telephone. And I had some comments of people saying we sounded so natural and so comfortable together. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Oh, that's great. And I'm not surprised. We're friends and we respect and admire each other. So that's as it should be.
So, and politically, we're almost pretty simpatico also. There's a few things, but
well, we are simpatico politically. Yeah.
So that's, and speaking of that, we are over a year away from the 2016 presidential elections, the bourgeois electoral system. And so far, we don't even know who's going to be the candidates for the twin party of war and Wall Street, the Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. But there's already debates happening, hype. First of all, I think the Republican slate is like a clown car and they all pile out when they go to the debate. But yesterday was interesting. You said it seems like the Democrats are still part of the evil system, but they're more formidable. Would you like to comment on the election and on that?
Sure. Well, I think you graphically characterized the Republican candidates. But it is a serious thing that the Republicans, the clown car, has people like Carly Fiorina, the one woman who was used in the last debate to try to destroy Planned Parenthood,
right,
one of the most important institutions in the country dealing with women's health. And the thing that I found so disturbing about Carly Fiorina's role was not even that they used the woman to do it, but that, although that's no accident, but the fact that she told the big lie, mm-hmm, and that instead of there being any kind of integrity at all to the monopoly capitalist-dominated mass media, which if there were, she would have been driven out of any consideration, mm-hmm, because of being a spewer of the big lie.
Which,
a Goebbels level spewer of the big lie.
What's the big lie?
Yeah, well, the big lie was that Planned Parenthood was selling the fetuses that, mm-hmm, that were the product of some of the activities, mm-hmm, around women's health. So, and the manufacturer of so-called documentation,
right.
to that effect. So you know, when we talk about, we live in a country, and you're as aware of this as anyone, that waged a war against the people of Iraq mm-hmm. on the basis of two major lies, the weapons of mass destruction that couldn't be found anywhere, and the supposed connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, which their only connection was they were enemies. So those two major lies were the basis, were the rationale for the United States to go to war. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately or tragically is more like it, the people of the United States didn't care enough about the people of Iraq to stop the U.S. government, either under Bush or Obama,
right.
from waging that unjust, unprovoked, fabricated war based on lies. So when we now have Carly Fiorina in the Republican debate being praised by the media as this tough, determined stand that she took against Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. this is a grave danger for the people, not only of the United States, but for the people of the world. But she is the one female member of the Republican clown car that you mm-hmm. referred to. So I don't want to focus only on her, but have to say about Donald Trump mm-hmm. in particular, that the chauvinism that he's preached, the anti-immigrant, anti-Latino hysteria that he has spawned, is also in keeping with the theme that I'm trying to indicate here about the dangers of fascism that these people happen to be putting forth to the masses of the electorate.
Can I, on that point, yeah. mm-hmm. Especially Donald Trump and immigration, mm-hmm. the thing is of course, his statements have been extremely fascist. He doesn't have any like political power. But of course, the people with the money in this country do have that political power. So all of the Democrats, the grassroots Democrats I'm talking about, have jumped on Donald Trump for saying these things, but they're not in the streets or criticizing Obama, who has deported more immigrants than any. So he, the one with the power, has deported more immigrants than any president before him, mm-hmm. broken up families, put children in detention facilities. So these people are screaming about comments Trump makes, but they're not in the streets opposing Obama and his actual policies.
That's an excellent observation, and I'm glad you made it. Mm-hmm. And I certainly agree with you 100% about that. And the only thing I would add to that is that Trump, like Fiorina and the other Republican clowns and mm-hmm. the Democratic puppets mm-hmm. of Wall Street, are political. They do have political mm-hmm. influence. Mm-hmm. They do have political mm-hmm. influence. But the distinction that you made is absolutely true, and that Obama, who was actually responsible for the misery right. of so many immigrant people, immigrant families, has not been held to account.
Right.
And isn't being held to account, even while by the same people who are decrying, correctly decrying, Trump's fascistic, chauvinist hysteria that he's promoting. So, but I think that's the comparison I found between the debate of the clown, you know, you call it the clown car, now I'm taking it on.
Well, they're evil.
They're definitely evil clowns. But the Democrats, the Democratic debate of the five erstwhile candidates was so much less just I can outpunk you mm-hmm. than the Republican one. The at least four of the five Democrats are much more formidable individuals. In 2008, there was such a big deal made of the fact that Obama and Clinton, Hillary Clinton, but particularly Obama, were so much more formidable individuals than an obvious punk like George W. Bush mm-hmm. and an ignorant one, mm-hmm. and the ignoramus that John McCain, the mm-hmm. son and grandson of naval admirals, both with silver or platinum spoons in their mouths from the time that they were born. They were so much less formidable than the Democratic contenders. And a lot of people supported the Democrats on that basis. But like you, I'm an enemy of the empire. So for me, the fact that Obama was more formidable than Bush, and as I wrote at the time in 2008, meant that Obama was a more dangerous enemy of the people of the world, and that's been shown
to be over and over again.
Yes, it has.
Unfortunately, like we were saying before, we were right, but we didn't want to be right.
Exactly. And that kind of segues into the Democratic candidates, because to me, I think the question of how leftists and how working class fighters relate to the Sanders campaign is not a simple one, but there is one simple, straightforward principle involved, and that is that when Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, said, "We came," meaning the U.S. imperialist power, "we saw, he died," referring to Muammar Gaddafi, and then for Bernie Sanders to say that he's friends with Hillary Clinton,
and he admires her, likes her.
The fact is that anyone who is an enemy of empire, anyone who is an enemy of tyranny, cannot support the stand of Bernie Sanders in defense of this evil empire in the United States. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're an activist in the fight for single-payer health care, that you shouldn't participate in a joint effort with Sanders or the Sanders campaign in fighting for single-payer health care. It doesn't mean that that people associated with the Revolutionary Organization of Labor, USA, shouldn't tarnish their hands in being involved with any of these campaigns that might advance, or that, that could advance, the effort at free college education for our youth, and especially eliminating the role of these banks in getting this blood money from the students and ex-students that happens. The question about those that want to bring justice to Wall Street by jailing these dogs couldn't form a campaign and try to rally people that are now supporting Sanders on that issue, where he at least rhetorically is saying we want to break up the banks, and I'm not sure if he has said directly we want to put these people in jail, but at least that using that momentum to build a mass demand for these things. Because there's no doubt in my mind that Sanders' platform domestically is very positive. But the question, as he himself has said, whatever he means by it, that we need a political revolution in the United States, he's more accurate than he realizes. And he certainly doesn't represent that revolution, especially because of the fact that he made the determination from the beginning of this campaign that he was going to support the Democrat. And as you said earlier, the Democratic Party probably is the more dangerous in our time, at least in this last few decades, the more dangerous political party of the twin parties of Wall Street, the Republicrats.
Oh, absolutely. Only, if not only for the reason that the Democrats are very skillful at undermining and shutting down political and social movements because of infiltration and just because of
co-optation
and the lesser evilism that we are, you know, inundated with. But you know, there's things that Bernie says when he's in front of his crowds. I should say Senator Sanders.
Yeah, you should say
says
that, because he's not our buddy.
He is in front of crowds, Mr. Sanders will say, "Oh, we need a political revolution," but then he goes to the Democratic National Committee gathering and promises that he's using his campaign to rebuild the Democratic Party.
Well, at least he's being accurate about that, isn't he? That's exactly what it's trying to do. You may recall that a number of years ago, not long after Obama became president, I had written in one of the Raelite newsletters the fact that Obama was an ideal representative for United States monopoly capitalism and imperialism in trying to lead the masses of the population in the United States on an orderly march toward austerity and toward this becoming an impoverished country. Mm-hmm. And it's been remarkable mm-hmm. how rapidly that march has proceeded backwards from the standpoint of the 99%. Uh-huh. And I do believe that what I said further on that in that quote was, but that the fact was that it was only at the beginning of that march, and that they meaning U.S. imperialism, the U.S. empire, would have a difficult time being able to get the people and the working class in particular in the United States to continue that march without ending with a revolt on behalf of socialism mm-hmm. in the United States. So I do think that the Sanders political platform is a safety valve, which it's resonated beyond what he and his initial campaign people had thought would happen. But it is in line with what I had raised back then, because the dramatic backward development of the United States for the 99% of us, at least, mm-hmm. Has led to a point where there's large masses of the people with for whom Sanders' campaign platform resonates. And that is a platform of much greater equality of income. The $15 an hour is, even though that's not a living wage, it's so much closer to a living wage than the current minimum wage. And the free education for college level, the universal health care, these are all things that that people need, and we're further away from it, mm-hmm. really, than we were 5, 7, 8 years ago,
absolutely.
When Obama came in.
It's another contradiction of Sanders, because, you know, he is saying that we need these programs in the United States, and then when he was accused of being affiliated with Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, mm-hmm. when Chavez's Citgo was providing low cost or no cost heating oil to residents of Vermont. Bernie mm-hmm. Sanders rightfully worked with Venezuela on that program.
Right.
And then, so he was accused of it during his campaign recently, and he called Chavez a dead communist dictator. The only thing true about that was he's dead.
Right.
And so, and of course, Venezuela has an excess of democracy. It has the most valid, transparent elections on the planet. And Chavez actually implemented these programs for the people of Venezuela that Chavez and the people of Venezuela worked together to implement these programs so if Sanders gets in and implements, does that make him a communist dictator also? So that's another contradiction. Instead of saying, yes, look at what working class and poor people can do with a true political revolution, mm-hmm. he's actually denouncing those political revolutions.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You make a very good point. It's interesting that Hugo Chavez was not a communist.
Mm-mm.
And from my perspective, unfortunately, he was not a communist.
Barely.
But he was certainly a socialist of the stripe, approximately, that Sanders calls himself.
Right, exactly.
And as you said, the populist programs that were implemented under the leadership of that patriotic mm-hmm. leftist leader, Hugo Chavez, which benefited the masses of the people, the 99%
mm-hmm.
In his country, they are what would happen if Sanders so-called platform was actually implemented in reality, which is an indication that Sanders is really with the fact that he condemned Chavez in this campaign is an indication that he's really with the Democrats and with Wall Street, and not with the people.
But to implement these programs, you need a political revolution, because our presidents are supposedly not dictators, and they have to work with the Congress to get these things passed. But we saw when there was complete Democratic Party control of all the institutions in Washington, D.C., they passed this fascist health care law. Mm-hmm. So when most of the people in the United States would be behind more of a single payer.
Absolutely. It was ruled out before they even started.
Yeah. So we actually...
It was a wonderful health care program for the insurance industry. It was a dream come true for them.
So Obama's been a great president for those kind of people.
He's been a great president for Wall Street and the 0.1%.
We wanted to talk about the recent million, but I want
to... I just want to say one last thing.
Right.
Again, that doesn't mean that people who have an enlightened position about the fact that we cannot vote in all of these populist programs that will cost Wall Street so dearly without a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that, therefore, those of us who understand that fact should sit out this election. We still should be involved in making the demands on the system, like Sanders is making, and utilize that campaign and that momentum, as well as other possible candidacies for president, to put the pressure on this system, that the people, we, the people, and we, the workers, are entitled to a decent life, and that decent life has been rapidly being taken away from us, and it's time for us to stand up and fight back.
But one point I want to make before mm-hmm. we move to the justice or else thing in Washington, D.C., is that as a revolutionary organization of labor, as a revolutionary socialist or communist in the organization, we can't only focus on how this change, this political change or revolution would help the people in the United States. We're an internationalist organization.
Right.
And at our hearts, we're internationalists also. And so to me, a more healthy United States would really mean a healthier world.
Right. And a healthier world would also strengthen the forces for a healthy United States as well. I'm glad you added that point again, because that's one of the biggest complicating factors in how to relate to the Sanders campaign or any campaign that was touched by this blood-stained Democratic Party. So.
We're just going to go a little bit over time, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Because this is really an interesting discussion we're having.
Yeah.
And I really don't have any... I try to keep it to 30 minutes, but I really don't have any time constraints. I was a history major. I studied U.S. history. I went to UCLA, which is a good university.
I thought you went there for the basketball, though.
Yeah. by the time I actually went, I was more concerned with education, because I was an older student. But anyway, I studied U.S. history, and we never really studied movements or U.S. history as taught here in the United States is about the presidents, the wars, the men, the people who... the imperialists, the capitalists, that's what U.S. history is about. And so we learned that between World War II and Reagan, probably, there was a time of middle class prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't learn that middle class prosperity was often at the expense of the people around the world, because we are an empire. But that was also the time of great imperial expansion. So from your perspective, as, you know, somebody who has been in this struggle, you know, a labor leader, working class, a workers activist your entire life, what was your perspective? How has your perspective on that?
I think that what you said just now is generally very accurate. And the fact that the people of the United States, for the most part, supported even the outrages of the U.S. imperialist war on the people of Vietnam, mm-hmm. one of the most brutal wars that I know of in human history, and one of the most one-sided, and yet David won that war against Goliath.
Yeah.
Because of the unprecedented heroism uh-huh. and organization of the Vietnamese people under the leadership of the Vietnamese communists. And it was an inspiring struggle, but you're correct. The key factor in my view then and now in the support of the people of the United States for imperialist war and expansion, for U.S. imperialist war and expansion, was that certainly from about 1950 to 1970, there was a period in the United States where the working class was able to actually improve its standard of living without the kind of bitter and bloody struggles against their own capitalists mm-hmm. that had to have been waged in prior times. And right. would have had to be waged since, and the workers in this country actually haven't made any gains in their real wages since the early 1970s.
Right.
So it was that period, but there's also always the people are going to take an easier path or try every easier path before they take the most difficult path, the path of revolution. And when easier paths have shown themselves to actually work for a period, the illusions about that easier path last an awful long time. So I think that's been a lot of what we've been dealing with, both within the labor movement, within the Afro-American people's struggle, and in general in the social movements in the United States, certainly the anti-war movements mm-hmm. as they've ebbed and flowed.
Right. Depending on who's president.
Yeah. Right? Which party's in power. Yeah.
You know, they should just like be honest and call them the anti-Republican war movement.
You're absolutely right. I just want to add one last thing about this, and if we have to end on this, uh-huh. it's okay. But we just had the experience of the Fast Track campaign.
Right.
And so for those that think that there's a big difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, or for those that think that Obama would have done such wonderful things if the devilish Republican congressional leadership had only allowed him to do so, mm-hmm. I want them to ponder this fact that Fast Track for Obama on the Trans-Pacific Partnership was won not by the Democrats in Congress, but by Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, and by John Boehner, the House Speaker, yeah. The Republican leader.
Former.
Yeah, now he's former. But it was the Republicans that carried the heavy load mm-hmm. to get Obama, of all people, Fast Track. This was something Wall Street needed to have. And your listeners, I hope, will pay attention to this phenomenon, because it's not Wall Street tries not to expose the real relationships among their political puppets, but there are occasions, there are crises when they need to call all of their due debts mm-hmm. in, and this was one of them. So, for example, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Democratic National Committee chairwoman,
the traitor,
was one of only 28 Democratic members of the House mm-hmm. that supported Fast Track.
Right.
And they tried not to have to use those Democrats, because it was one of the few times, and as an activist in the organized labor movement in this country, this may be the only time that I can recall that virtually the entire labor movement at the top as decrepit and treacherous as much of that leadership is and has been, they united, the labor leadership united in opposition to fast-track for TPP. And it was the Republicans, with key Democrats, such as Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they needed some Democrats to do it. And that lesson is there for your listeners to be clear that that it's not that the Republicans and Democrats are at odds. They work cooperatively with each other in order to represent the interests of Wall Street. And that's something that as we go through the Sanders campaign and the Clinton campaign and maybe the Biden campaign, that people need to remember this experience because it's a very valuable one.
Well, I think my listeners, I'm very proud of them. I think they understand that point that you just made, but many people who, like...
they need to share it, though.
Yeah, they're
if they understand this, they need to fight for that with their relatives, their friends, their neighbors, their coworkers.
For sure. This seems like every 4 years when we have a presidential election, many people get a selective amnesia around these issues, and then they start talking about the lesser evilism. But let's go to the so-called Justice or Else march that recently happened that... the Nation of Islam organized Louis Farrakhan, and your comments about Justice or Else.
Well, first of all, I think the fact that Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam were able to, 25 years ago, call out a legitimate million and more men, black men, to come to Washington, D.C. to try to help... kind of stem the tide of the dysfunction and destruction of the black family in the United States. And of course, in the face of this unprecedented incarceration rate of Afro-American men, which is connected to the whole history of the United States and slavery. And now the prison industrial complex. But the fact that Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam was able to pull out over a million black men at that time, that was a great accomplishment, and there was nothing in the left that could compare to that achievement. And there have been a few million worker marches and all of this that had a few thousand people them. So that's an indication of the fact that that black nationalism, and especially black nationalism with some militant tint to it, resonates strongly with the Afro-American people. Which, as you know, ties in with our the understanding of the Revolutionary Organization of Labor USA, that the Afro-American people in the Black Belt South constitute an oppressed nation, and that the Afro-American people outside of the South in the United States constitute an oppressed national minority, and that that nations, including the Afro-American nation, have a right to self-determination. So this whole phenomenon of in the last few weeks, this 25th anniversary march that was called again by Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, brought out maybe a few hundred thousand. And again, compared to the peace march that we participated in and other recent activities, that was a phenomenal outpouring. And again, this time it was mostly Afro-American people. Not only men, and it was a more broad invitation, but it was mostly Afro-American people who responded to it. The problem, as we see it, with the Nation of Islam, the main problem, is that it has had historically a strong desire to coexist with and accommodate U.S. imperialism. And so I think you were saying to me that Farrakhan was saying, justice or else send us your money and we'll buy land from the enemy with it. And I think our approach has to be, we've in this same period, and somewhat inspired by the fact that this march was going to be held, we've brought back tried to help bring back the outstanding role that Robert Williams, his wife Mabel, and the armed black people in Monroe, North Carolina, mm-hmm. The stand that they took in the late 1950s. And it's worth your listeners knowing that at that time, it was not clear whether Robert Williams or Martin Luther King Jr., with his nonviolence and integration, mm-hmm. Versus Williams' armed self-defense, was going to be leading the struggle of the Afro-American people mm-hmm. in the United States. And in fact, in Monroe, North Carolina, in that area, where there were at least 20,000 Klans people that were functioning during that period, Williams, a Korean War veteran who applied for and received a charter for a veterans club mm-hmm. and armed the members of that club and trained the people, they ended up being successful in stopping the outrages that had been going on
right.
In that community. And it was only when the U.S. government framed Williams on kidnapping charges, interestingly, at a time when King's nonviolent people came into the town and kind of it was a disruption because they didn't understand and respect the customs and
right.
the culture and all that. That frame up for kidnapping a white couple that was done to Williams. He and his wife Mabel escaped to Cuba and later went to China, and that effectively moved him out of the running to be the leader, even though he was a modest man, and he wasn't trying to be
right.
the leader, but his leadership was so outstanding
right.
that he was definitely in the running versus King's nonviolence and integration. So when you and I say justice or else, I think it's a positive thing when we say justice or else armed self-defense or Negroes with guns.
Mm-hmm.
Negroes with guns was the name of his outstanding book
right.
that dealt with that subject.
My listeners can watch the documentary, Negroes with Guns. To me, it was very inspiring.
Right.
Yeah.
I was surprised in that that the late now Julian Bond mm-hmm. was so admiring of Williams
right.
and that, because I didn't think that Bond at the time of the crisis had been so supportive, and maybe he hadn't been.
Right.
He was with SNCC, and with Bond was with SNCC, and then was a local Georgia politician, and then was the head of the NAACP.
Uh-huh.
And actually, Robert Williams had been the head of the Monroe NAACP,
right.
but as you would expect, he was bounced by the national NAACP
right.
because of his effectiveness in fighting the system, which they didn't mm-hmm. Like at all. But so it was great to see that Bond was so admired in that documentary that you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
which I think is also called Negroes with Guns,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully your listeners will be viewers of that, and that justice or else will end up having some substantial enforcement of Black Lives Matter.
Oh. This is a very important discussion. Many of my listeners consider themselves pacifists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't consider myself a pacifist. I live my life nonviolently. I don't initiate confrontations. But I think that the right to self-defense is a human right.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, if it's a right for the people of Iraq, unfortunately, to defend themselves and their communities. I say unfortunately because my son was killed because he was a part of the invading, occupying force. I think the people of Iraq, the people of Afghanistan, the people of Libya, Syria, wherever, Vietnam, wherever, have that right to self-defense. So if they have that right, then we also have the right to self-defense here against a violent empire. And so when we as activists say, oh, we're nonviolent, we're going to just take the abuse of the empire, I think that gives the police state an upper hand.
Yeah, I love you anyway. and I think you're absolutely right about that. And the whole question of Black Lives Matter is at risk in the United States. And it's exactly how do we enforce the fact against forces in this country, for whom black lives don't matter, how do we enforce the fact that black lives do matter, and we're going to compel you to respect that and to respect the people? And that is, I think you said it well, and that was what that's what Robert Williams was all about almost 60 years ago now, and proved to be successful with back then.
Well, and the thing is when you're saying, like, the leadership of these corrupt labor unions opposed TPP, and when we say...
Which was a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing, but we say, or else, to me it's like, or else we're going to not have, we're going to not have as much enthusiasm when we vote for Democrats next time. You know, what kind of effect is that going to have? We're still going to vote for you, but we're not going to have so much enthusiasm.
Yeah.
You know, so we're still endorsing the evil system.
Well, you and I are not, and what we're trying to do is to help to sharpen those that are already somewhat enlightened to the point where they're ready to do something constructive on behalf of these liberating ideas. And, you know, the fact that black lives matter and working class lives matter and the Afro-American people and the working class as a whole, which includes many Afro-American workers, they need to find their way to unity, along with certainly the Latino working class in this country, and especially the most oppressed sector, the immigrant workers. And then I think we will have the beginnings of the political revolution that will not only sweep the Bernie Sanders platform into reality, but it will sweep away social Democrats like Bernie Sanders, who's an apologist for the U.S. empire, in the process.
Well, I just like have one last question. Do you know Brother Ajamu Baraka? He's an author activist. he actually moved down to Colombia now, but I had him on talking about this question of Bernie Sanders and his imperialist leaning. And he said in the United States we have very little international solidarity, because if we can say that, you know, that single-payer health care, free education is more important than the lives of children in Palestine, then we're not like getting the whole picture. We don't have that solidarity that as an organization and as people we so crave.
Yeah, I would differ with that formulation. Mm-hmm. I think that that it's not either or, but the fact that we have failed to have sufficient international solidarity with the oppressed peoples and the rest of the international working class has led us to a situation where our own capitalists are so powerful, thanks to their control of so much of the world, that we have been deprived. We're the only advanced country in the world that doesn't have single payer or some form of single payer health or universal health care.
So
I think that it's the fact that we failed to support the right of the Palestinian people, the self-determination, is an important part of the reason why we don't have single payer health care in the United States. So I think it's the connection is that way, not the other way. And at the same time, the revolutionary forces in the rest of the world, we need their help to build a revolutionary movement in the United States. This has been the center of what I like to call the belly of the beast of world capitalism for the last six decades. That's an awful lot of crumbs that we talked about earlier, bribery of a sector of the working class over a period of years. And it leads to craven support for the most bloody and vicious tyrants in the world, and that is the Wall Street puppets of the Republican and Democratic parties in power.
Or vice versa. It's a synergy that combines together to help them and always hurt us. So Ray Light from the Revolutionary Organization of Labor, USA.
Yes.
It's been so wonderful. The time, I'm sure we'll continue our conversation, but it won't be recorded. So okay. Ray, thank you so much, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, and I wish your listeners the best in this campaign period that we're entering.
Yeah, revolution. That's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer. I'd like to thank Ray Light for coming on the Soapbox with his unique and very good analysis of current events. I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.